First smell test of the year with NFL plays coming up in about 25 minutes. Ben Standig is with us in his normal spot. He'll be with us Mondays at 12, Fridays at 12, and whenever we want him in between. Ben just put out on his Substack his 7th annual NFL agent survey. Always really interesting stuff from it. We're going to talk a little bit about that to start, and then we will get to Ben's season prediction and previewing and picking the game on Sunday and talking about some of the injuries that will be a factor in Sunday's game. So I really do enjoy this read every year. It was a great idea to do this when you started it. I think there's some significant learnings that not, you know, normal fans tend not to know, and even people in the know, you know, learn a lot from a lot of this. What were the big takeaways for you from this year's survey?
Yeah, it covers the range of, you know, what do people think of general managers and talent evaluators? How do they look at different organizations, the good and the questionable, we'll say. But there are also topics like, you know, what's in the news. And the Jerry Jones, Micah Parsons trade obviously has been very much in the news. And I thought what was interesting is the immediate reaction that everybody had seemingly was, Jerry Jones screwed this up. Jerry Jones botched this, and I think there's a case to be made. If he's going to trade Parsons, he should have done it back in like the spring when there would have been more teams potentially in the mix to take on a guy with that kind of salary. But that said, I was pretty surprised, to be honest. Yeah, there were more agents who were in that first camp, but there was enough who said, yeah, they kind of buy what Jerry was selling in terms of, they ultimately came down to he couldn't spend all the money on basically three players. They've already given Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb a ton of money. If they had signed Micah Parsons to essentially the deal he got for Green Bay, like those three guys that I think would be like half of the Dallas salary cap, something like that. And also, a lot of people said, hey, look, there's definitely some smoke about the idea that Micah Parsons was not necessarily a great fit in the locker room. DeMarcus Lawrence this offseason left Dallas to go sign in Seattle, and on the way out, he and Micah were beefing on social media about their, you know, about Parsons' attitude in the locker room. So it's interesting to see that, like, whereas something that was immediately publicly viewed as a big loss for Dallas agents who, you know, obviously they hear, you know, they have clients in these locker rooms, they talk to everybody around the league, some of them were very convinced that Jerry actually did the right thing, although, you know, even if he maybe could have done it a little bit earlier.
I really did feel like in the moment, wow, you know, he's going to get absolutely crucified for this. But Dallas fans ultimately sort of supported Jerry, I think, you know, at least in, you know, simple majority or a slight majority. I think a lot of them had it with Micah Parsons, and certainly the amount of money was a driving factor ultimately in the way they felt. All right, there was a lot of Washington stuff. I actually read from this yesterday in the area in which there was a quote from an agent that called Washington, quote, the most stable organization from top to bottom. I just found that quote to be absolutely amazing, considering where they were for so long and as recently as 2 years ago. So any, you know, you can share with everybody just the overall agents, you know, you had 24 agents surveyed on the condition of anonymity for this. But what were some of the, you know, interesting takes about Washington as an organization, Quinn as a coach, and Jaden Daniels as a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I do these conversations over the phone as opposed to, say, video chat. And on that one where you quoted the saying they were top to bottom, the most stable, you know, I'm glad because the other person would have seen my jaw drop as you said it. Because, like you just said, it's just like, we all know it's improving, but to hear that level in this person's opinion. And honestly, it was an opinion that was not abnormal. I mean, you know, others said, hey, they are probably the most personable group that I deal with on a given basis, in terms of, and this includes, you know, Adam Peters, this would include Brandon Sosna, who's their, more or less, their cap and contract guy. This would include Lance Newmark, their assistant GM, and not to mention, you know, various scouts, you know, depending on the player, scouts start the process more than, say, the top of the food chain there. you know, there was also the notion of, hey, like it was a question about the Terry McLaurin situation. What did people think of that? And, you know, it was a mixed bag of responses, mostly questioning McLaurin's side of it. But, you know, some people were like, hey, look, this is Adam Peters setting the tone that we're going to be a tough negotiating situation here, similar to what things were like in San Francisco. And I'm sure that helps cloud some of the agents' responses, because San Francisco, where Peters was, not that he was involved with contracts, but he was learning from there, that, you know, they would frequently hold a line, and even if that meant negotiation dragged out deep into training camp, if not right before the start of the season, and we basically just saw that with Terry. But, you know, so even the people who were like, I don't know about that, all said good things about them in general. So I think that's a pretty positive deal. There was a question about which head coach gets the most out of their players on and off the field. Mike Tomlin with the Steelers won that category. Not, you know, hasn't had a losing season basically in his whole career, so you kind of get that. But Dan Quinn was certainly one of the names that was mentioned frequently and given a lot of credit for the team's turnaround last year because of that culture situation that we've all talked about a million times. And then with Jaden, to nobody's surprise, a lot of praise for him. And there was a question about which quarterback is going to dominate the league for the next decade. And this is one of those questions that, you know, people, you know, had to pause and think about, because on the one hand, some of them easily said, well, I mean, Mahomes is going nowhere, but staying with him or Josh Allen. And others looked at a young guy like Daniels and was like, if we're talking about an ascending player, who is more ascending than that guy? So he got a lot of praise in that regard as somebody who could absolutely control, you know, not just Washington's fate, but control the league over the next decade. There's so many variables that go into that, of course, but, you know, as we know, that's not been a sentence. Even when they won the Super Bowls, nobody was saying that about Joe Theismann, Doug Williams, or Mark Rippon. So this is really uncharted territory for this team in modern history.
You, moving away from some of the Washington-related stuff, there was a bunch of stuff in there on Shedeur Sanders and why he fell. I would urge people to, you know, become a subscriber of Last Man Standing, Ben's Substack forum. You can get a link to it and find out more about it if you go to @BenStandig. There is an opportunity right now for people to sign up for a discount, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Through week one, especially through Monday, 20% off monthly or annual rates. And, you know, of course, you know, the part of the attraction this week is the survey. But, you know, for Commanders fans, I'm going to be here all year. And, you know, we've already had a pretty good start. And, yeah, I would encourage everybody to, you know, take a look, join, and jump on board. By the way, you know, you mentioned that I'll be here on Fridays at noon. I forgot that, Dan, you and I are talking, so we may have to discuss that at some point. But because he could,
is Dan Quinn talking right now?
No. But he's coming in like the next 15 minutes, give or take. So,
we'll
figure that out.
Yeah, we accommodate you. Whatever works for you will work for us.
I also want you to be able to hear Dan Quinn on your own.
What I was going to bring up was that you had something in here about Arch Manning. The question, Arch Manning will be the most anticipated QB prospect since. Obviously, you asked all of these general managers before his very first game, but they said since Andrew Luck was the number one, and he was probably the last most anticipated. I don't know, maybe Trevor Lawrence was. But there were a lot of quotes. One guy said, I'm selling the Arch hype. He's barely played in college. Another said, Todd Marinovich, it's not the player, it's the family legacy. And, you know, it seems like there was some, before the opener last week against Ohio State, there was some skepticism.
Yeah. I think one of those sort of negative answers you just read was answered right after Arch's first game, because I was kind of finalizing this right all the way to the end. But yeah, I mean, look, obviously it's a fascinating player, but we all get it. I mean, it's one of those bits. If his name was Arch Smith, we wouldn't be nearly as enthralled as we are, because it's the next Manning, and that's what's so interesting about this. So there is something to that for sure. And obviously his performance last week was not particularly sharp, although I kind of thought he was just running for his life. It felt like the whole game, and I know Texas lost most of their offensive line last year to the draft, so we'll see how that unfolds. But yeah, it's an incredibly interesting situation. And it was, for me, it was kind of fun to see where an agent's mind went, because you could make a case he was the most anticipated quarterback since Caleb Williams just last year. The difference is that with Caleb Williams, it wasn't just one quarterback. There were other guys. With Trevor Lawrence, it was sort of Trevor Lawrence or bust to a degree. I mean, you know, so that's where I think some of these years can change, or the perceptions can change. But clearly Arch Manning will be a much-discussed quarterback prospect for the next year or two.
All right, some really good stuff in Ben's 2025 agent survey, not just league or Washington-related. There's a lot of stuff in there about the CBA. There's just a lot of good stuff in it. I would urge you to read it. All right, let's talk our team. The season it is about to open up with on Sunday against the Giants. I'm at 11-6. Max is at 11-6, and we both have Washington advancing to the Super Bowl. So this is your opportunity. I'm sure you've already done it on your Substack. So tell everybody what your season prediction is and how the season ends and where it ends.
You know, I haven't done it on my Substack because I knew how much you wanted to discuss it. So I waited for you. Okay, so like these are not caveats. I'm just explaining how my brain works. The reality is, there's just, look, of course, for every team there's a ton of variables, but in this case, we have a relatively short amount of data, i.e., one season, to figure out what this team really is. And again, we know how last year went. A lot of games decided at the very end of the game. They set the all-time modern record essentially for fourth down conversions. That's 87%. They faced a litany of blech quarterbacks last year, and the schedule was much easier on paper than it is compared to this season. So there's a lot of reason to point and say, that's going to be a regression. But the one thing I don't see as a regression is the quarterback. And to me, this is a point that matters more than what's their record, even though I get that's what we're all talking about, is that the floor is so much higher now than it has been at any point in the last, 20-something years, because of him. So the 11 wins of the Super Bowl that you guys are saying, and I could sit here and say, boy, you guys need to maybe get your heads checked, but I also can't say that you're crazy, because this is how good this kid is. If he plateaus as the same year he did a year ago, he could win the MVP. I've come around to the point, I think he probably should have won the MVP last year if we didn't have pre-existing narratives, because who did more with less than he did, essentially, in terms of where this team was.
Yeah, the numbers would have never supported it, though, because they're a big part of that MVP story is numbers.
Oh, I get that, but I'm saying if the valuable part is actually front and center, then who's more valuable? Anyway, so he could be great, and I think that's ultimately my deal. So I think Washington can be better this year. We defensively, it looks like they've improved along the line. The cornerback room is much, much better than it was a year ago. Debo Samuel is easily the best receiver, number two receiver, that Terry has ever played with here. So there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I just think when you factor in some of the regression stuff, I find myself landing closer to like 9-8 than, say, where you guys are. But again, for me, they could still be a better team, be 9-8. And the fact that Jaden Daniels exists is why this is all, even if I'm saying there would be three games less than it wins, three less wins than a year ago, do not take that as me saying this is the worst team. Just things might break the wrong way, and Jaden Daniels gives you the opportunity to make up for it, and that is all that really matters.
Is 9-8 good enough for a postseason berth or not?
I think so. I honestly haven't really sort of played that
last
match.
Year.
I
mean, look, 10-7 didn't get Seattle in the NFC.
Right. Well, I'll figure out a way to get them in at 9-8. I mean, look, we talk about obviously that they're playing the NFC North and the AFC West, two divisions that had a combined six teams in the playoff last year.
Right.
One game does not change anything, but you look at the game last night with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Philly obviously has lost a lot of pieces on defense, but their offense is still pretty amazing, and I would assume they'll have Jalen Carter in there for most games. I don't know necessarily what Dallas is going to be, but I do wonder if somehow, from a mental perspective, they might be better off without the Micah Parsons distraction. Clearly, the offense can move the ball enough. And I'm actually a little more optimistic on the Giants, partly because of their defense and partly, like Malik Nabers. So I think the division is going to be really tough too. And therefore, man, their schedule could be potentially brutal. You obviously never know how these things go, but, and look, the other teams have the same issues. It's not like it's just on Washington because they're all basically playing the same schedules. I just think that's going to be so important. You know, when a given week happens, do the certain breaks go their way? Last year, they absolutely did. If they do again, they'll be where you guys said. But I just, you know, the odds are that's not going to happen, and that's how I land at right. 9 wins.
Very good. Let's talk about Sunday. Who's at risk of not playing?
Well, I guess the one to watch is Noah Brown. He's right. been obviously missed, you know, the vast majority of training camp with the knee issue, with the knee injury he has suffered back in the spring. He's been limited this week, which we just wore outside for the stretching portion of practice, and I did not see him out there. Now, he could have been inside with the training staff or been given a vet day rest. So even if he does play, how much will he play? How effective will he be? To some degree, it's a similar question to Terry, although, you know, less of the far less, though, you know. So we'll have to see how that goes in terms of, how much does Terry play? I think Terry probably plays maybe a little bit less than his usual, but close enough. But how effective will he be? That's the big question. So I think the receiver room is the one to watch, and I know you've asked a lot about the running backs. Are they going to keep four up? I just keep thinking the answer is yes. When you look at the overall roster and who they could sit, I just think there's enough other guys that they can sit that he'd be the guy to play.
Okay. Prediction on Sunday. For Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, in honor of Lee Corso, I'll say Washington wins, but it's closer than the experts think, so something like 23-20 Commanders.
Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. I will talk to you on Monday.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Get to the coach. Right. Ben Standig, everybody, at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. When we come back, it is going to be a busy smell test for week one of the NFL, week two of college. Got a lot of games to give out. We'll do that when we come back. Turn on my mic. That usually helps. Year 20 of the smell test. My first year doing it, I was doing a show with John Riggins and my friend Gary Braun. That was a long time ago. Out of the 19 seasons, 14 winning seasons, 5 losing seasons. Last year, pretty good year, 112-97-6, so 53.7%. That pays. Yes, that's profitable. 52.6, anything north of that pays. Last week, really good start. 4-0 over the weekend overall because I had 2 Thursday night picks, 5-1 week one. I had NC State, which was a loser. I had Cincinnati, which was a winner, and then had 2 beautiful backdoor, late backdoor covers with Toledo and UTSA. UTSA was getting their ass kicked by Texas A&M, and they were down 42-17, getting 23.5, and UTSA put in their backup quarterback and started to run the clock out. And then for whatever reason, the coach changed his mind and decided, no, let's go for a score. And the guy threw a touchdown pass, threw a fourth down conversion, and then a touchdown pass for a great backdoor cover. I had Florida State against Bama. They won outright getting 14, and I had Miami on Sunday night getting 3 against Notre Dame, and they won outright in that game. So good start, 5-1. This is a long-haul deal. If you're not familiar with it, it's just a contrarian handicapping philosophy that seems to be popular now. It wasn't 20 years ago. Just try to find the sides where, you know, every dope friend of yours is convinced that they've got the winner and that the odds makers have screwed up the line, and just go against those people. That's part of it, but as I've mentioned over the years, I do have and get a lot of information. It comes from warm tropical places offshore. And really, this just comes down to the realization after many years that the house wins more than it loses. And I'm not talking about just because they charge a fee. They charge the VIG on a loss. No, it's when they need a side, it comes in more often than not. Not always, but more often than not. You can spot them now. This has become a very popular thing now over the last few years where, you know, common bettors now say, oh, that looks wrong, it must be right. That thinking changed in recent years. So you got to be careful a little bit. All right, 5-1 week one. Let's get to week two, and we'll start in college, where Indiana is a 36-point favorite against Kennesaw State. What? I almost gave out Kennesaw State last week against Wake Forest. They lost the game by a point, and they're a 36-point underdog this week. The line just really seems way too high in this game. Look, Indiana had this super surprising season last year, making it to the playoff, losing that game at Notre Dame in that really cold, kind of snowy game, that first playoff weekend. Last week, they opened up with a 27-14 win over Old Dominion. I liked Old Dominion in that game. And Kennesaw State, as I mentioned, had a shot as a 19-point dog at Wake Forest and lost 10-9. The 36 is super high, and it's rare that you get this, but a lot of public bettors are taking Kennesaw State plus the 36 points. So I'll lay the 36 with Indiana. Iowa, Iowa State, their annual get together. Iowa State's ranked after two opening season wins, the one in Dublin against Kansas State. They crushed South Dakota last week 55-7. Iowa beat an Albany team 34-7. Iowa is getting three at Iowa State. Public loves the Cyclones in this game. A lot of it just deals with Iowa's inability to kind of score. You know, they just don't score a lot of points. I think their quarterback's better this year, but man, this is a game that seems to end 10-7, 13-10. Last year was 20-19, 18-17 a few years ago. Just, you know, a game that tends to be played very closely. I'll take the three with the Hawkeyes on the road. This next game just seems flat out wrong. This is one of those that my buddy Scott and I call a general principle game. Duke at home getting only three against the 11th ranked team in the country, the Fighting Illini, off of their 52-3 opening week one win. Duke beat Elon. This line just stinks. Illinois should be easily a touchdown favorite. They're only a three-point favorite in this game. I will take Duke plus the three at home in Durham to get it done. Meantime, Ohio University is hosting West Virginia. Ohio, the other team that plays in Athens, this one Athens, Ohio, not Athens, Georgia. West Virginia last week, an easy win over Richard Montgomery. They beat Robert Morris last week, 45-3. Ohio was in a shootout at Rutgers as a 16-point dog and lost 34-31. Ohio's getting 3.5 at home, and everybody is on the Mountaineers. I'll take Ohio at home plus 3.5. And then this line is an interesting line, not only for this week, but moving forward, because Florida has an absolute brutal schedule. They have, after USF this week, they play at LSU, they play at Miami, they play Texas, they play at Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Florida State. Florida's schedule is so hideously hard. They won last week in convincing fashion against, you know, a not so impressive opponent, the only one on their schedule, Long Island. Don't ask me where Long Island is. I'm assuming it's in Florida somewhere, not actually Long Island, New York. I don't
actually. Yep, you're Long Island, New York. That is where they're from.
They're the LIU Sharks. They're a New York team.
Yep.
Are you serious? Long Island, they have a Division I football team?
Yeah, I know.
Where is Long Island University?
It is Brookville, New York.
Is that North Shore or South Shore?
Great question.
Nassau or Suffolk? I need more information. I just assumed it was some school in Florida because their nickname was the Sharks.
No, it's right outside Well, LIU's got a Brooklyn campus. Yeah, they're yeah, from New York.
All right. Oh, LIU's in Brooklyn, you're saying. Actually, Brooklyn.
They have a Brooklyn
a
campus,
Division
that's for
One
sure.
program somewhere in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Maybe in that beautiful Williamsburg, Brooklyn. All right. Didn't know that. Did not know that. Doesn't matter. South Florida last week absolutely took Boise State, a ranked team, to the woodshed 34-7. And now they're playing Florida, who beat Long Island. And Florida is an 18-point favorite in this game. Public loves the big dog. This is a second big favorite I'm giving out. Give me the Gators to go to 2-0 before they meet this schedule. I mean, at LSU, at Miami, the next 2 weeks. Oh, by the way, they get a week off, and then they host Texas before going to Texas A&M. That is brutal. Florida laying the 18. Those are the five college games in the smell test. There were a bunch of other games that I liked. Just couldn't pull the trigger on a few of them. Too much sharp money opposite what I liked. By the way, Maryland plays tonight. They're a 16.5-point favorite at home against Northern Illinois. Kind of like Northern Illinois plus the points tonight. Not rooting for it. Rooting for another big Malik Washington day, another big night from the defense. Friday night games, College Park, you get a chance to get a crowd. Hopefully, Coach Locks and company, Pep Hamilton, the offensive coordinator, they get a big crowd tonight to see Maryland beat up on Northern Illinois. But a lot of people on Maryland tonight after their impressive week one win. All right, let's go to Sunday. I'm not giving out Northern Illinois. I might play Northern Illinois a little bit on the happiness hedge. I like them plus the points tonight. All right, there are a lot of NFL games in week one, which is always scary, but a lot of games fit the smell test criteria. Let's start in the 1 o'clock window. No play tonight, by the way. No play tonight. Last night, I leaned under. I don't know how that game ended up under after it was 21-20 at halftime. The total was 47.5. Just 3 points in the second half in the game finished under. Aaron Rodgers. I'm a big believer in Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. But they are on the road at MetLife against a terrible Jet team perception-wise. And they are laying only 3. This is one of the most heavily bet public teams of the weekend. There is sharp money on the Jets. Give me the Jets plus the 3. I do not have the Giants in the smell test. It was close. The sharp money is really split in this game. Public money is definitely on Washington, although it's come back a little bit. So I am off that game. I'm glad I did not have to give out the Giants this week. The Panthers are getting 3.5 on the road at Jacksonville. Jacksonville, another perception-wise team that people think will bounce back this year. Trevor Lawrence, Travis Hunter, the whole gang. Carolina, look out for the Panthers this year. I think I believe in Bryce Young. I'm going to take them plus 3.5 on the road at Jacksonville. The team that nobody thinks has any chance of being good this year, the New Orleans Saints. So whenever they're getting less than a touchdown this year, expect everybody to be on the other side. The public lined up on the Cardinals, laying 6 on the road in the Superdome. I'll take the Saints. The smell test often gives out very bad football teams. The Saints plus the 6. The Colts are actually right now are a 1-point dog at home against Miami. Nobody thinks Indy's good. I'm not sure people realize that Miami isn't going to be very good. I'll take the Colts at home plus the 1. Cincinnati's one of the most public bet teams of the weekend on the road, laying 5.5 against the Browns. I'll take the Browns plus 5.5. Last year, I had the Patriots plus, I think it was 8 in Cincinnati as the biggest underdog anti-public side, and they won the game outright. So don't be shocked if Cleveland ends up winning this game outright in the opener against Cincinnati. Move to the 4 o'clock window. And I'm going to give out the Titans plus 8.5. Denver's a major public side. I don't love, giving out 8.5 point. I would have much preferred to see this line at like 6.5, 7, or at like 10.5, 11. 8.5 tends to be the sweet spot for favorites in this kind of scenario when there's a lot of public action, but it's overwhelming Denver action. There's some sharp money on Tennessee. I'll take the Titans plus the 8.5. Nothing on Sunday night or Monday night, but man, I'm leaning Baltimore. I can't figure out why the Ravens are actually favored in this game. You know, these are two great teams, don't get me wrong. The action is somewhat split in this game. I was thinking the action would be heavy on Buffalo so that I could give the Ravens out, but I can't. So there we go. We've got 5 college plays, 6 NFL plays. It almost ended up being a lot more than that. But recapping on Saturday, Indiana minus 36 against Kennesaw State. Iowa plus 3 on the road against Iowa State. Duke plus 3 at home against the number 11 team in the country, Illinois. Ohio plus 3.5 at home against West Virginia. And Florida laying 18 against USF, who beat up on Boise last week. On Sunday, the Jets plus 3 against the Steelers. The Panthers plus 3.5 at Jacksonville. The Saints plus 6.5, plus 6, excuse me, at home against the Cardinals. The Colts plus 1. In their opener against Miami. The Browns plus 5.5 against the Bengals, and the Titans plus 8.5 on the road against Denver. As always, this is for entertainment purposes only, unless you're like me, and it's not. All right, when we come back, our final score prediction for Sunday, 301-230-0980. So I want Washington Giants final score prediction. You can add a note or two. And I want your Super Bowl pick. I want the matchup and the winner. We'll give you ours. We gave you the matchup. I've got Washington and the Chiefs. Max has Baltimore and Washington. Give me your Super Bowl pick and then your Sunday Washington, New York pick. We'll do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, happy Football Friday, everybody. It is September 5th. I am Max Ames. Here is what's happening. The Eagles, last night, they beat the Cowboys in the inaugural game of the NFL season. Jalen Carter thrown out of the game before the first play from scrimmage for spitting on Dak Prescott. A nearly perfect offensive performance from both sides in the first half. It pretty much slowed down in the second, including a rain delay that did not help things. A few key drops from CeeDee Lamb down the stretch. Eagles win 24-20. Christian McCaffrey has been added to the injury report for the San Francisco 49ers with a calf injury. Doesn't appear to be entering the season as healthy as we originally thought. My thoughts are with all of you Christian McCaffrey drafters in fantasy land. The Nats, they take on the Cubs in an afternoon weekend series from Wrigley Field. Jake Irvin on the bump versus Javier Assad. First pitch at 2:20. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 1:50 on 106.7 The Fan. Tonight, Maryland, they take on Northern Illinois in College Park. Kickoff at 7:30. Pregame starts right here, 6:30 on the Team 980 following Burgundy and Gold today with Linnell Willingham. Plus, the Chargers, they take on the Chiefs tonight live from Brazil. That'll be on YouTube for free. It'll be an 8 p.m. kick. That is tonight, as I said before, on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, this update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's Office every day throughout football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Of course, I love clock management talk, and yet I can't even manage my own show. Chris Russell is going to jump on with us in 2 minutes to get his thoughts on the season and on Sunday. Max and I, over the last couple of days, made our NFL picks, and we got to our Super Bowl matchups, which, look, I understand I'm out on a limb. I think Max is too. But for the first time in 2 decades of doing this, I feel justified in going out on that limb and predicting great things for this team. I have Washington advancing to the Super Bowl, beating the San Francisco 49ers on the road to get to the Super Bowl to face the Kansas City Chiefs. Max has Washington going to Lambeau. No, Where did you have him going to Tampa and beating the Bucs on the road and making it to Super Bowl 60 against the Ravens? I will end it there. I'm picking the Chiefs to win Super Bowl 60 with, you know, the tomahawk chop and the whole thing going in Santa Clara on February 8th, 2026. I got the Chiefs as the Super Bowl winning team. It'll be their fourth straight trip to the Super Bowl. Amazing. And them beating Washington in their first trip to the Super Bowl since 1991. Who do you have winning the Super Bowl?
So before we started this segment, I had the Ravens, and then you picked the Chiefs. But I think there's something about this jersey that I have on. It's seeping into my system. It's in my bloodstream now, Kevin. I've flipped. The Washington Commanders are going to beat the Baltimore Ravens in the Super Bowl. The good guys are going to come out on top of the DMV, and we are going to be celebrating down Constitution
Ave.
Yeah, we're delusional.
This opens us up for major, major scrutiny, especially on social media.
That's fine.
Which I don't pay attention to, thankfully.
Shouldn't.
All right, let's give our let's bring in Chris Russell, and we will save our Sunday predictions for the very end of the show. Look, you've been doing this now for a while as well. I mean, we've known each other for 15 years, every bit of it. And you know that over the years we've all been incredibly critical and haven't had a lot to be excited about. I think this is the most anticipated, highest expectation season in forever. I feel justified, reaching and giving a big pick like Washington going 11-6 and making it to the Super Bowl. A, do you think we're nuts? B, what is your season prediction if you haven't, you know, if you've done it, if you're saving it for your show? I should have asked you this.
No.
You know, you can tease it.
So but, here's what I have done. I have given out the top, the division winners, wild cards, the ranking of the seven playoff teams, and who I think will be the NFC champion. I have not actually predicted a Commanders season record, but I am more than happy to do it for you, being that a lot of people listen to your show and they don't listen to mine.
That's not true. How crazy do you think it is that I actually legitimately believe this team can make the Super Bowl?
So you are one of the most sharpest analytical minds that I know.
Oh, stop it.
No. Seriously, I say that in all deference, right? I mean, you think the game, we think slightly different on things, but you think the game from a layered contextual standpoint, I think just about as good, if not better, than certainly, you know, anybody in the market and anybody. So I know you're not just being flippant, just saying, hey, I'm a Commanders fan.
This is not for shtick.
Right, exactly.
This is not a bit.
So I genuinely know how you feel. And I listen to you every morning, so I know what you're fearful of. I know what you're, you know, excited about, all that. I don't think you're crazy at all. Now, do I exactly agree? No, I have them losing in the conference championship game at Lambeau Field to the Green Bay Packers.
That's pretty close to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, same spot as last year, but I think the path to this year's, again, projected conference championship loss, a little bit different, right? I don't think they win as many games on the last, but what you said this morning, and I think what you've said all along, is they should be better in some ways, so you don't have to necessarily pull out games. Now, what I worry about is not only the upgraded schedule, playing the two toughest divisions in football, the NFC North and the AFC West, number one. Technically more road games, even though the ninth road game is in Madrid and they'll have plenty of fans, whatever. That's still a tough trip to make. On top of that, I worry about these super, super short weeks. Not only the Sunday to Thursday, like we have coming up.
Yeah, their net rest days isn't good.
Yeah, but the Monday night to Sunday nonsense, couple of times, another Thursday game Christmas week. You know, now, yes, they play on Saturday against the Eagles that weekend, but still a short week, all of that. To me, I worry about that, not guys getting injured, but guys not being ready to play because their bodies are so beat up, especially later in the year. So that's why I have them ultimately not making the Super Bowl, but I do have them making a run, and ultimately I picked them as my sixth seed. So I didn't have them winning the division. I had the Eagles winning the division. Sixth seed, and look, it's really tough to go on the road and win in the playoffs, but we already proved that this cat can do it.
Yeah.
And you think they're better. I think they're better. I know you think they're better. Now, I think they're better on defense than you think they are, but
well,
I really
sure.
worry about
I'm
special
just saying
teams.
That I'm not sure yet. I'm hopeful. I'm not saying they're not. I just want to see it first. Yeah.
No, I understand that. I worry more about special teams. I am worried sick to death about, and I know nobody played, but kick return coverage was a major problem in the preseason. I know nobody played.
Yeah.
I understand that. But Matt Gay also, even sub 50, where he struggled plus 50, sub 50, he wasn't good in camp. He missed a 49-yarder. He missed, I want to say it was a 46-yarder against Cincinnati, or maybe it was Baltimore. I can't remember. One of the two.
I think in the first game against New England.
Well, that was, I think that was 49.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Against New England, but he missed another one. I believe it was 47 or 46, but I'd have to double check my notes on that.
Okay.
But I do worry about special teams.
I think the, you know, what you said, and we've talked about it here too, like there will be seasons with Jaden Daniels at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a big projection, but it's not a major leap, in which we'll just, the team will be fighting just to get in.
Yeah.
And there will be a belief. There will be a belief that this team with this guy, if they just get in, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a rookie, he proved. Now, look, if they go 9-8 and miss this year, if they go 10-7 and get eliminated in the wild card round next year, and then all of a sudden in 2027, we're like, you know, that rookie season winning two on the road, maybe that was the aberration. But if it's not, getting in, they're going to have a chance because the teams with the best quarterbacks always have a chance. Remember last year, nobody wanted Cincinnati in the postseason because of Joe Burrow, because of what he could do. As bad as that defense was, you talk to any of those playoff teams, it's like we'd rather not see them. And that'll be the case. So,
and everybody wanted Houston, and what did C.J. Stroud do against the Chargers?
Yeah, came back from, you know, an early deficit.
Yeah.
And by the way, almost beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
They were in that game at
yes,
Arrowhead.
They were. Yes, they
but
were.
I think it'll be one of those things where we're set up for year in and year out, believing that, hey, even if they just barely get in, you got a shot. And so we'll see. You got them as a sixth seed, and you got them in the NFC title game.
Yeah.
Max and I have them in the Super Bowl. Max has them winning the Super Bowl. What are the keys Sunday?
I'd love to get out there. I'd love to get out to the Bay Area.
Well, you're already for Super Bowl 60. Back to the NFC Championship game is for a lot of people a big leap.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What happens Sunday? What are the keys?
Let's start with stopping the run, which I think if there's a game this month that they're going to stop the run, it's this one. Because you got Jacobs, Genty, and
Bijan
the next three weeks.
Yeah.
So you damn well better stop the run. And I think they've been pounded about it internally, externally, what have you. I think they'll show a little pride, bow up a little bit, you know, force Russell Wilson into 2nd and 9, 2nd and 10, 3rd and 8, you know, what have you. Get home a couple of times. I think, I don't remember what your stance on this, but I think the pass rush is probably going to be as good as it was last year. Because Kinlaw, I remember he had like, what, 7.5 sacks with the Jets last year.
Yeah.
B, because of Vaughn, you know, he gives you 5, 6, 7 sacks, whatever it might be. And I think Jacob Martin is going to be a little bit of a secret sauce surprise.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a big secret sauce surprise, Dan Quinn. Secret sauce. I actually think that Ben Sinnott's going to be a contributor this year.
I heard you say that, and that's exactly what I said to Linnell yesterday. And that's what Logan Paulson didn't say big surprise, but Logan was basically like, look, I know it hasn't shown up in the box score. Ben Sinnott's way better than he was.
Oh, really? Yeah, Logan said that?
Yeah, yesterday on the show.
Yeah, so. I mean, early on, there were some things being said that they really were excited about his offseason and what he would be. I think Ertz just is such a security blanket right now, but I think we're going to see Sinnott be a contributor at some point during the season.
I agree.
All right, so let's get to our final score predictions. I'll go first, then Chris, then Max. I'm going Washington 30, the Giants 24. Ooh. I think this is going to be a competitive game, a high-scoring game. We're going to get a good look at, you know, the improvement against the run, if it's there or not. And my footnote is Matt Gay goes 3 for 3, Chris. 3-for-3 in the opener, so we don't have to talk about him next week.
Listen,
what's your final score with a
footnote? Yeah, I would love to be wrong. Here's my final score prediction: the Commanders win 20-17. My footnote is that we are going to be talking about Matt Gay. Now, I will say game sealing or game changing interception by Marshawn Lattimore in coverage against Malik Nabers.
That would be a hell of an ending. I can't see 20 points with this offense this year.
Unless the other team just dominates possession. Yeah,
you know?
I have a healthy respect for the Giants pass rush, as I know you do too.
But also,
they have a revamped secondary. You know, remember the last couple of years we've been able to beat up on Deontay Banks, the Turk.
Adoree Jackson.
And Adoree Jackson. Adoree is now getting beat up in Philadelphia, and Deontay Banks is in a battle for starting spot. May play some, but not even guaranteed to be out there against Terry like he has been a lot.
My Terps got to get a little bit better. I agree with you. All right, Max, your final score prediction with a footnote.
Final score prediction: Commanders 24, Giants 18. Chris Rodriguez is the team's leading rusher.
Chris, real quickly, Rodriguez or Bill? Who gets more carries Sunday?
I think it's Rodriguez because I'm not even sure if Bill's going to be active.
That's what I've been saying, that there's a chance he might not be active.
I heard you mention that. I mentioned the same thing last week because I started thinking last year, Kev, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't remember a game where they had four running backs.
Well, they only had three on opening day on the roster.
Right, but remember late in the year when Rodriguez was, when the injuries, Rodriguez was on. So to the point, right, they were shuttling back and forth. I don't remember a single game where they had four. So I assume they'll be at three, right? But they could be at four because they can all help with special teams, whereas B-Rob really couldn't. So they could be at four. But if they are at three on Sunday, I think it's Chris Rodriguez over Bill.
Have a great show.
Thanks, Kev.
We will talk,
I'm
sure, as the weeks unfold here. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Chris Russell's next. Enjoy the football. Be back Monday with a recap of not only our game, but the entire weekend. Enjoy it.